My name is Elena Gaitanjeva. I'm a Bulgarian journalist and Middle East correspondent. I've been working mainly on war issues, and I've been covering war zones as well as investigations into illicit arms deals and arms trafficking to terrorists in war zones, as well as recently I've published a few investigations into biolaboratories around the world, Pentagon biolaboratories in 25 countries across the world. So I'm focused on investigating all types of weapons, be it conventional weapons or biological or chemical weapons.
Now, can you tell us something about the trafficking of weapons into war zones? Because I think for many people, they're surprised that the wars, particularly in the Middle East, somebody seems to be supplying all these terrorists with vast amounts of equipment and strategic expertise. So how are the weapons getting to these people?
What I'm going to say now is fully based on documents and on evidence that I had collected on the ground in Syria. What I can say is that those governments claiming to fight terrorism are the same governments. In December of 2016, I was in Aleppo in northern Syria reporting on the Battle of Aleppo when the terrorists retreated from their positions. I was able to get inside Al-Qaeda warehouses full of heavy weapons, and I was able to film the identification marks of these weapons and their country of origin, and later on to trace back these weapons to the country of origin of these weapons and their original supplier. In this case, it was the government of the United States, Saudi Arabia as well. And the manufacturer was my country, Bulgaria. I filmed 122 millimeter Grad rockets originating from Bulgaria. And I found these weapons in a warehouse of Al-Qaeda in Syria. I traced back these weapons, and later on I received leaked documents about 350 diplomatic flights from Eastern Europe via different routes, but the final destination of these weapons was Syria or Yemen or Africa.
Did you manage to discover who was masterminding these operations?
Yes, absolutely. These flights, diplomatic flights, they were diplomatic and they were performed by the Azeri state-run company Silkway Airlines. So in order for flights to be diplomatic and to receive and to be granted diplomatic clearance, a state, in this case Azerbaijan, must apply for diplomatic clearance. So in this case, we are talking about a whole international weapons shipment network involving the governments of many countries, with Azerbaijan being I wouldn't say the organizer, because this air company, Silkway Airlines, was chartered by the governments of the United States, Saudi Arabia, and the United Emirates. And these weapons originating from the Balkans or other countries in Eastern Europe, including my country, Bulgaria, these weapons were transported on these diplomatic flights to different locations, but they were later on smuggled to Syria. And I filmed a lot of weapons in the hands of terrorists in Syria, and I traced back these same weapons to their original supplier. It was, in my case, it was the government of the U.S. Special Operations Command or the government of the United States and also Saudi Arabia, their Ministry of Defense. These two governments supplied weapons to militants in Syria, and I will use the word terrorists because this was al-Nusra Front operating in Aleppo, and al-Nusra Front at that point was the Syrian affiliate of al-Qaeda in Syria.
Okay, well, look, what you've done is very important. It's fascinating, but take a step back for a moment. What does this tell us about the Syrian civil war?
This tells us that the war in Syria was very well orchestrated and was masterminded by the governments of the United States and Saudi Arabia, also the United Arab Emirates at that point, because you will not have a war, in this case, a 8-year-long war, if you don't have weapons flooding this country and coming from abroad, especially on diplomatic flights. I also interviewed the deputy commander of the so-called Syrian army, Colonel Malik al-Kurdi, and in his exclusive interview to me, he confessed and confirmed that there is no such thing as moderate opposition in Syria, that the Free Syrian Army is just a name that is used to lie or to manipulate the public opinion around the world that these are moderate rebels, they are democratic fighters. I interviewed him in Turkey, in Adana, near the border with Syria. I didn't interview him inside Syria because the Free Syrian Army did not operate in Syria. And he told me that all the weapons are set to having been shipped to moderate rebels. Basically, they ended up in the hands of terrorists in Syria. What is also very important is that you can't talk about moderate weapons when you have rebels using 122-millimeter Grad rockets. No moderate rebels or democratic fighters or peaceful protesters use such heavy weapons because these are indiscriminate weapons. I myself saw how these heavy weapons killed people in Aleppo. One such rocket fell next to us and beheaded a mother and her 5-year-old child before my eyes. This is how I decided that I would do anything possible to expose all those governments arming terrorists. Because in the end, these weapons that were shipped to terrorists, they killed civilians, mother and children in Aleppo.
Now, what you're describing is a sort of network which is maybe masterminded by the UK, the US, and some of the Gulf states, but actually including Eastern European countries, which I think many people will be surprised to hear. But of course, those countries are actually part of a military alliance called NATO. And I wonder if you think NATO has figured in running proxy armies then in Syria.
In this case, they even didn't use NATO to hide behind because they chartered the planes, I mean, the U.S. Special Operations Command, in the end user certificate or the Defense of Saudi Arabia or the Defense of the United Arab Emirates. And in the end user certificate of these weapons, it was written that the end user was, for instance, the government of the United States. But the government of the United States doesn't use non-US standard weapons. These weapons, these Eastern European weapons, they are Soviet-style weapons, and they are not compatible with the NATO standard that the military of the Saudi Arabia or the United Arab Emirates. So it obviously, when you buy weapons, when you apply for a permit with the government of the manufacturing country, obviously these weapons wouldn't go to your army. They would go to to a third party, and this is arms trafficking. When these weapons go to the war zone, this is also a war crime and involved in war crimes in Syria. Those countries are the United States, Saudi Arabia, and Iraq. I'm saying that, whoever doesn't believe me can simply look these documents themselves. I have published a lot of documents and investigations into who arms terrorists in Syria and in Yemen. In the case of Syria, even the U.S. Special Operations Command deployed and ammunition from Eastern Europe on Pentagon charter via Qatar to Syria.
Now, you were talking a bit there about being quite close to a child being killed. Was it quite dangerous work, this investigation?
It is very important in the first. Because if I or other journalists hadn't shown the truth about Syria, who else would show it? Probably if I hadn't seen Syria myself and seen with my own eyes the truth about, I would never dispose that claiming to fight terrorism, same government supporting this terrorism. But this is the truth about Syria. Also, the first victim of every war, this is the truth. And this is what happened in Syria. They said arming moderate threats. Wasn't true. This wasn't the case. They were arming terrorists. That is why this war, it's been probably 8 years now. Yes, eight years now. And there is no end because too many countries, state actors, have been involved in this war. And everybody arms its own or proxy on the ground in Syria. If we can't stop the arms trafficking to these militants in Syria, we would never stop this war. It will continue. Some of the media organizations in the West, they were interested and they published some of these documents and they did investigate this story, this scandal. I wouldn't say that in general mainstream media doesn't report on arms trafficking selectively. Here we're talking about selective reporting. It's about the US or the previous administration, the Obama administration, this arms trafficking happened. I would urge all matter addition or whatever to join forces and to expose this international arms network because they kill civilians, they kill mother and children, and we must stop there. So I'm thankful to you for giving me the opportunity to talk about it and to inform people there about the biggest crime in this decade. In my opinion.
Well, another crime that you've helped to uncover is the Pentagon's secret bio-warfare labs. Now, I think for most people, they believe that all sorts of chemical and biological weapons are banned, that they're simply not allowed to have these labs. What did you discover?
I discovered that the Pentagon has funded biolaboratories, military biolaboratories in 25 countries across the world.
Most well, they may say, mightn't they, that these are civilian. They will probably say the Pentagon, if they were on the line now, they will say, well, they're civilian.
That is not impossible to be said because the funder and the sponsor of these biolaboratories, as well as the scientists working inside these biolaboratories, are mainly U.S. military scientists. So you have funding from the Pentagon on the one hand and Pentagon scientists working on secret projects inside these biolaboratories. On the other hand, what is very worrying is that I would quote one of the documents that I have published. What kind of work has been performed inside these biolaboratories so that these Pentagon contractors need to be U.S. citizens and have security clearance. This is very worrying. Also, what is very worrying that in places where there are such Pentagon biolaboratories, for instance, in Georgia, in the country of Georgia, this is a former Soviet Union country, or bordering on Russia, or, for instance, in Africa, we have a lot of strange, inexplicable outbreaks of deadly diseases. For instance, the Ebola outbreak in Africa, or in Georgia, the Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever virus outbreak. It's very deadly and very dangerous. And you have these Pentagon biolaboratories working under projects, military projects. I say military because these are Pentagon projects. They are not civilian projects because they are funded and implemented by the Pentagon. This is the sponsoring party of these projects. And you have U.S. military scientists working under this program. It is a program involving 25 countries, and you have strange outbreaks, deadly outbreaks in these countries. It's very worrying.
Yeah, could you maybe you could just run through some of the countries where these biolaboratories you discovered are?
They are in former Soviet countries such as Georgia, Ukraine, also Azerbaijan. Also, they have a biolaboratory. They are Armenia, also in Africa, in Asia, a lot of places around the world. But mainly, these are countries that are located in countries bordering on the U.S. main rivals, Russia, China, and Iran.
Interesting. Now, there are quite a few people, including the former head of MI6, Sir Richard Dearlove, who have suggested that COVID-19 may be a bioengineered weapon. I wonder, is it feasible that it may be linked to one of these labs somewhere?
What can be proven for sure is that this coronavirus, novel coronavirus, is a chimera virus consisting of two viruses, other viruses, the pangolin coronavirus and another bat coronavirus that was discovered in China in 2013. The pangolin coronavirus was also discovered in smuggled pangolins, again in China. So you have a chimera of two different coronaviruses. Also, you have this Wuhan lab performing work under a U.S. Project, 3.7 million project funded by the U.S. National Institutes of Health. And this is American project implemented in this Wuhan lab. And this project, American project, in this Wuhan lab involved, I say, use past tense because it was terminated when it became publicly known that there was such a project. This American project was about the creation of chimera coronaviruses. And you have the novel coronaviruses, which causes COVID-19, which is also chimera virus. And you have these two possible viruses that were can be isolated, and that are very similar to COVID, to the novel coronavirus, found in China. So too many coincidences. I think a very thorough scientists from around the world must get involved and investigate it. But unfortunately, it has turned to be a political issue, pro or against China. It shouldn't be like this. We should stick to the facts. And facts are that the U.S. government has funded a $3.7 million research on coronaviruses and the creation of chimera coronaviruses in Wuhan, and we have the result, a pandemic that spread across the world. And it is highly likely that this novel coronavirus is a chimera virus.
The other question must be then, possibly more viruses to come, that this biological warfare may not be the last.
Absolutely, unless people realize the truth and insist on answers and immediate actions by our governments or international bodies, this could happen anytime. I mean, such a pandemic is highly likely to happen again because these biolaboratories, nobody knows what work has been performed inside. Secondly, it's so easy to have a laboratory leak in the first place. It is very dangerous to have such biolaboratories researching chimera viruses. Chimera viruses, they don't exist in nature. Scientists create them in the lab for the reason of the possibility if one day in the future one of these viruses joins with the other virus, and in this mixture of viruses they will create a very highly pathogenic virus. This is highly unlikely to happen in nature. They do it in the lab. And this type of research, which is called gain-of-function research, must be banned forever. It's very dangerous because scientists create artificial viruses in labs. They can either escape from the lab or they can be disseminated by evil people or people who want to use them as bioweapons. It's very dangerous. So we must start from this point, realizing danger and taking immediate actions to have these biolaboratories shut down.
How do people follow your work?
I have set up an independent investigative journalism platform called ArmsWatch, armswatch.com, and people can find all these documents that I have referred to now about Syria or biolaboratories published there, armswatch.com.
What can we do, do you think, practically? I mean, I think most people would agree that we've got to try and stop our governments doing research into biological weapons. But what can we practically do?
I think practically this is a matter that can be referred to the United Nations. And as well, it can be referred to the committee in charge of the ban on biological weapons, because all these countries, they have signed the ban on biological weapons. So they must fully comply with this international agreement banning biological and chemical and radiological weapons. They don't comply. For instance, in the United States, the U.S. Army produces regularly biological agents that can be used as biological weapons. They say they do it for research, for defensive purposes. But what you produce as weapons to research them for defense, what is the guarantee that you will not use it as an offensive biological weapon in the future? There is no guarantee, and the United States doesn't comply with its international obligations to fully uncover all its work done inside these biolaboratories in the United States or abroad.
Finally, we are in the West. It looks as if we are allied to the United States, which is doing this. We are in a situation where our own governments seem to be actually making things worse in the world and possibly sending us towards a wider war. Do you think that's possible?
I come from Eastern Europe, and here the situation is the same. We are a NATO member state. We have four US military bases in Bulgaria, and we border on the Black Sea, which borders on Russia, for instance. So I think these governments must act more in more responsible way and understand that the world is such a small place and they must be neutral. If the United States has an issue with Russia or with China or with Iran, this is their issue. It is not my or your issue. It is the United States' issue. And I don't want my country, or I guess you don't want your country, to be involved and dragged in endless wars that will benefit nobody but the United States. So we must be very, very neutral talking about such issues. I mean, if we don't take sides, that's better.